Today's Old Testament reading comes from the book of Isaiah, the 42nd chapter, verses 1 through 9. Let us listen for the word of the Lord. Here is my servant whom I uphold, my chosen one in whom I delight. I will put my spirit on him. And he will bring justice to the nations. He will not shout or cry out or raise his voice in the streets. A bruised reed he will not break, and a smoldering wick will not be snuffed out. In faithfulness, he will bring forth justice. He will not falter or be discouraged till he establishes justice on earth. In his teachings, the islands will put their hope. This is what God the Lord says, the creator of the heavens who stretches them out, who spreads out the earth with all that springs from it, who gives birth to the people and life to those who walk on it. I, the Lord, have called you in righteousness. I will take hold of your hand. I will keep you and will make you to be a covenant for the people and a light to the Gentiles, to open eyes that are blind, to free captives from prison, and to release from the dungeon those who sit in darkness. I am the Lord, that is my name. I will not yield my glory to another or my praise to idols. See that the former things have taken place, and new things I declare before they spring into being, I announce them to you. This is the word of the Lord.
Our New Testament reading today is from Matthew chapter 3, verses 13 through 17. Let us listen for the word of the Lord. Then Jesus went from Galilee to the Jordan River to be baptized by John. But John tried to talk him out of it. I am the one who needs to be baptized by you, he said. So why are you coming to me? But Jesus said, it should be done, for we must carry out all that God requires. So John agreed to baptize him. After his baptism, as Jesus came up out of the water, the heavens were opened, and he saw the Spirit of God descending like a dove and settling on him. And a voice from heaven said, this is my dearly beloved Son, who brings me great joy. This is the word of the Lord. I think it was probably the middle to the end of third grade. And it was one of those sessions where you were going around the room reading, and everybody had a paragraph, and then the next kid had a paragraph, and the next kid had a paragraph. And this particular story we were reading that day was about Crazy Horse. And I had done some reading about Crazy Horse before. And for those of you who are somewhat familiar with the story of Crazy Horse and Sitting Bull, they are from a tribe of Native Americans. They live in the Midwest. And the pronunciation of this tribe in no way matches the spelling. I had been reading about Crazy Horse for years. I'd been fascinated by him at that point, and knew that he was from a tribe called the Sioux Indians. So when it was my turn to read, I boldly pronounced the name as it appeared. At that point, my teacher stopped me and said, Dan, that's pronounced Sue. And I said, I'm sorry, what? That word that you just read, it's Sue. I said, it's spelled S-I-O-U-X. Sioux. It's the Sioux Indians. No, Dan, that's Sue. No, Sue is S-U-E. Or, yeah, come on, epiphany. This came probably right after learning that the rank of colonel is something different than colonel. I've had serious trust issues with the English language ever since. This week is Epiphany. Those are epiphanies, right? Sudden or striking insight. An epiphany is actually almost always, believe it or not, learning that we were wrong. that things, reality is a little different than we expected, that you don't say that word psyox. It's Sue. Who knew? Now we do. There are three, and I had several other epiphanies this last. Do you remember some of the big epiphanies in your life? Things you've discovered or learned? Maybe it was something about yourself or the world. I remember learning that eating more than two Krispy Kreme donuts is always a bad idea. Seems like it was a good plan at the time, but then later, Or learning that letting somebody merge in front of you actually feels way better than cutting them off and getting mad. Or learning that traveling with a toddler is usually a bad plan. Epiphanies are actually wonderful and beautiful things. And one of the epiphanies I had this past week when I was preparing for this is that there are actually, most people who are familiar think epiphany is associated with one story, right? Which is the wise men coming. And of course, it's called epiphany because they have the realization that Jesus is Messiah, God come to us. But one of the epiphanies I had in learning for this is that there are three co-equal stories of epiphany, and that the wise men coming is only one. Oh, what? Who knew this? I did not know this until now, because we had the wise men last year. But this year, the story is Jesus' baptism, which is another of the three stories. And the third story is the wedding at Cana. And each one of these stories presents an epiphany, a striking realization, learning something new that we did not know before. Just as the wise men is the story of the realization of Jesus' birth, of God with us. This story of Jesus' baptism is another incredible story of realization, of epiphany, of insight. It's a short and simple story, but it is loaded with references that if we go over too quickly, we might miss. Jesus is coming from the wilderness, where he spent 40 days and 40 nights being tempted. Anybody remember anybody else having an experience of 40 in the wilderness? And coming up out of the wilderness and going through the Jordan River. Yes, this is the Israelites. This is reminiscent of God's people who spent 40 years wandering around in the wilderness and then passed through the Jordan River on their way into the promised land. And so when Jesus comes to John, traditionally baptism was something that was reserved for converts to Judaism. It was a symbol of being bathed, washed, immersed in the water, and coming out. It was a symbol of death to your old way of life and resurrection to a new way of life. And when Jesus comes to John the Baptist and says, John, I want you to baptize me, John says, this is backwards. You should be baptizing me. And Jesus says, no, we need to do this. This is a powerful hint that, by the way, this is not just about Jesus. This is Jesus very much symbolizing his people. Just as his people spent 40 years wandering in the wilderness and come through the Jordan River into the promised land, so Jesus is representing his people wandering in the wilderness and coming through the Jordan River. But instead of not trusting God afterwards, he does. Jesus is the embodiment. This is what we believe is incarnation, right? The embodiment of humanity, of God's presence, of us. It keeps going, and there's a couple other hints towards reading this story this way as well. He comes up out of the water. This is a phrase that gets used in the Old Testament as well. Noah, coming up out of the water through the flood. And as Noah comes up out of the water, what happens? There's a bird, right? A dove. Of course, the dove is also present even earlier, right? Read this text 2 weeks ago. At the beginning, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth, and the Spirit of God was hovering over the surface of the waters. This is creation. This is about humanity. This is about God's people. And here we have Jesus coming up out of the water, and the Spirit of God is again present and hovering. And now we have another element. Well, it was there at the beginning too, right? In the first three verses, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. You have God the Father. Verse 2, and the Spirit was hovering, and the earth was void and dark, and the Spirit of God was hovering over the surface of the water. Verse 2, you have the Spirit. And in verse 3, God spoke and said, let there be light. You have the Word of God. It was Jesus. First three verses of the Bible, you have the Trinity. Kind of cool. Here in this text, we have these three elements combining again. We have Jesus, the Son of God, God present with us. We have the Spirit of God hovering over him, and we have God speaking. This is my beloved Son in whom I am well pleased. Profound. A declaration of identity, who Jesus is. Of course, that's the temptation, right? Is to doubt this, to doubt that Jesus, that's what Satan says. If you are the Son of God, is how he starts each one of those temptations, right? If you are the Son of God, prove it. What I find so amazing about this text is that God declares, this is my beloved Son with whom I am well pleased. What point in the gospel readings does this happen? How long has Jesus spent in ministry at this point? Zero. Hasn't performed any miracles, I love the Old Testament text Kevin read. It's one Jesus chooses in the Gospel of Luke to start his ministry. I have chosen you. The Spirit, this is how this one starts, right? Look at my servant whom I strengthen. He is my chosen one who pleases me. I have put my Spirit on him. And the evidence, here's what the Spirit is for. All of that, I have chosen you, my Spirit is on you, so that you will bring justice to the nations, so that you will bring light in the darkness. These verses are powerful. You will open the eyes of the blind. You will free the captives from prison. You will release those who sit in dark dungeons. How much of this has Jesus done yet? None of it. And yet here we have God's voice speaking, this is my beloved Son who brings me great and powerful joy. I think it's very easy for us to get the idea that we need to do these things in order to please God. That if we want to be loved, if we want to belong, we should be about our Father's business. We should be bringing light. We should be bringing justice. We should be caring for the oppressed. We should be doing everything we can. And that if we do these things well enough, then God will love us. But that's not what this story is it? This is the profound and striking epiphany, is that we are the beloved. Jesus here is not representing just God. He is representing us. Him being baptized is not because God needed to be baptized, but showing that we are baptized, immersed in God. And as we give ourselves to God, we find God's presence with us. We find our Father speaking over us. You are my beloved child who brings me great joy. Talk about an epiphany. You don't have to earn it. It is given to you. And it is precisely that infilling and that gift that provides the strength and the presence to go forth and do what we are called to do. It is because the Father is pleased with Jesus. It is because the Spirit is present with him that he is able to go forth and bring sight to the blind and bring healing to the sick and bring freedom to the captives. It is because our God is with us, because we deeply know that we are beloved, that we are free to walk out into the dark, unloving places and cruel places in our world and bring kindness and compassion. This completely inverts the story. Instead of us being good in order to earn God's favor, because we have our God's favor, we can bring goodness with us wherever we go. That's an epiphany worth waking up to, worth recognizing that we were wrong and changing how we live into a way that that incorporates our belovedness in who we are. Remembering that the source of our identity does not come from our achievements, but from our sonship and daughtership. We are God's beloved kids. I love the image from Isaiah 42 of God saying, I will take you by the hand. I got the chance to do that this last week in Hawaii. Abby and Grant, who are normally quite, they're 12 and 11 and quite independent, till I get them out into the deep blue reef. And all of a sudden, they want to hold my hand. And it was so fun for me to be able to hold their hands and take them out their places they would not have gone on their own. For them to be able to see some of the things that they would never have seen if they weren't holding my hand. And this is precisely the image we have of God saying, I will take you by the hand. I will lead you into these places of bringing light into the darkness, into these places of bringing compassion where there is none. I am your Father, and because I love you, I will be with you. This is so much different from us trying to go out and make a difference in the world on our own so we can impress our God. This is God saying, I am going to go before you and hold you by the hand as you do these things. Yes, it's dark and scary out there, but I've got you. Abby kept saying, Dad, there's sharks. I'm like, of course, but they'd have to get through me before they got to you. You're going to be fine. This is our God with us. This is so hard as a human to get into our hearts, though. This may be easier to know with our heads. It has been for me. I think this is one of the profoundest struggles of my life, and it continues to be so. We all, as humans, you're not unique. I'm not unique. Above all else, we want to be loved. No matter what you're covering that over with, no matter what you think it may be, at its core, the thing each of us most want love. And most of us at some point or another have learned through society or our parents or somewhere in between that the way to get love is to do enough for other people, to be impressive enough, to accomplish enough, to be pretty enough, to be smart enough, to be rich enough, whatever it is. But that's not how this works. And of course, as we chase those things, and when you get them, you find that they deliver a lot less than they promised, right? I love the story of Michael Phelps, who is the most decorated Olympic athlete of all time. You know, if I had accomplished that much, I'd feel all right, right? Not just an Olympic gold medal, but 22 of them. And at the end of this, he ends up feeling depressed. He starts contemplating suicide because he realizes that accomplishing everything actually didn't do for him what he hoped, which was prove that he was lovable. There's no number of bestsellers you could write that would make you feel okay. There's no amount of money in your bank account that would actually be enough. There's no amount of PhDs which would make you feel accomplished. What we have to stop and recognize is before any of these things, we are loved. If we stop and sink down into the presence of God with us and around us and before us and after us, holding us by the hand, we recognize that we are loved. You are loved right where you are sitting this morning. And there's nothing you can do about it. There's nothing you could do to make God love you more. You're not going to impress him. He loves you just like he made you. And of course, he holding your hand has all these wonderful, amazing things for you. Places to go, differences to make, light to shine, epiphanies to realize. And he's going to be with you each step of the way as you go. And you're going to get there not because you are awesome without him, but because you are awesome with him. the best places, the most amazing things we see. The places Jesus goes in his life are, of course, places he goes because he is led by the Spirit. What Jesus does in embodying God and revealing God to us, showing us the epiphany that God is with us and for us, is of course the mission God has planned for each one of us. That this chosenness of Jesus isn't just Jesus, but of course Jesus embodying all of God's people. The text from Isaiah isn't just a text about Jesus, it's a text about us. You are my servant whom I strengthen. You are my chosen one who pleases me. I have put my Spirit upon you. You will bring justice to the nations. You will bring life to those who sit in the darkness. You will bring sight to the blind. You will bring freedom to those who are sit in captive in prison. This is what God has intended for each of us. Jesus is embodying here in this text, not just God, but us. God's people, this is what God deeply desires for us. That's good news. And that's an epiphany. Join me in singing our hymn of response, number 243, Songs of Thankfulness and Praise.